Hello and welcome to this edition of Patrolling the Channel for October 2009. Patrolling the Channel is a monthly searchsecuritychannel.com podcast geared toward educating security solution providers. I'm Nicole Damore. Today I'm speaking with Matt Bossom and Travis Watson, both of Accuvant. Matt is the program manager for Accuvant's technology solutions practice. He brings more than 8 years of IT security experience to the position and is responsible for creating tactical business solutions and helping clients evaluate, select, deploy, configure, and integrate a wide range of security and networking projects. Travis is currently the solutions engineer at Accuvant. With over 12 years' experience in the IT security field, he's familiar with many facets of IT security, including forensics, cryptography, incident response, risk assessments, penetration testing, DMZ architectures, wireless architecture, and intrusion detection. Today we're going to be talking about secure remote access and secure telecommuting, so let's get started. We're constantly hearing about the threat of swine flu and pandemic planning. If such a pandemic should strike, many employees might decide to work remotely, so what kind of security issues could that create?
Well, the security issues, obviously people are going to have to remote in somehow, and the primary method to do that is going to be VPN technologies, client VPN, either through IPsec or SSL. There's not necessarily security issues, except if people don't have company assets and they're using home machines that may or may not be suitable for a company network, you know, may have viruses on there, spyware, things like that. That could introduce a security issue. There's ways to mitigate that, but none of them are painless. Really, it's more related to productivity. If people can't get in or your network's not prepared for it, then you're obviously not getting the productivity you were hoping for.
So what are some of the most common security issues or problems with the VPN that solution providers are seeing in companies with lots of telecommuters?
Well, as it relates to security, kind of as I was saying earlier, they won't have a company asset. They won't have, a company-issued laptop. So using a home computer, which has goodness knows what on it, it could have all sorts of, viruses or malware, spyware. If the companies are allowing split tunneling, it could be simultaneously connected to a malicious website. It could have peer-to-peer file sharing software on there. You just don't know what's on there if it's not a company-controlled image and company-issued asset. And, of course, not all companies can afford to give everybody in their workforce a laptop. So that would be a security issue, viruses coming in via remote workers, spyware coming in via remote workers. That's the issue I've seen in the past. And in fact, there were companies, well, it's not related to just even one incident. On many incidents, they're actually protected pretty well internally with their firewall rules and their ACLs in the enterprise and even in their standard corporate image. And then one user somewhere comes in and starts to, drops this virus on the network. And even though they're prepared for it from the internet and not letting the stuff come in, from around the world, they're a little bit more gushy on the inside, and the virus is let loose.
And when Travis says ACL, he's talking about an ACL, access control list, on firewalls and routers, so the perimeter of the network.
Are there one or two specific security technologies that really need to work well within the customer's data center in order to keep the remote system secure?
Antivirus software, obviously, is going to be penultimate. Making sure that your users are patched, making sure they're secure. There are solutions out there that some work better than others. Some are a little bit more tedious than others. But NAC is the commonly used acronym for Network Access Control. And that can check for certain DLLs, certain executables, just to make sure that you have antivirus running on the host system or a personal firewall running on the host system, personal IDP, those sort of things. And less than until those things check out, the user isn't allowed onto the network. That's, kind of hit or miss depending on the company policy and just how much work and effort you want to take in doing that. But it's not uncommon either. A good example would actually be like a college or a university where they have students that go back home and put who knows what on their laptops and then come back to school. The universities will employ a network access control solution and give them limited access onto the network, checking for antivirus and things like that. That's not always the best solution for business, just because it can be a little bit cumbersome, but that you can pare it back quite a bit to make it less cumbersome.
I would say that, you know, one of the bigger, you know, benefits for a company nowadays would be an SSL VPN in comparison to an IPsec client-based VPN that would have had to have been used a couple years back. You know, I'm starting to see a lot of organizations that are concerned with pandemics, as well as, you know, many other, you know, remote office deployments, where they're, you know, switching everything over to SSL so that you could have any type of device, whether it's a laptop that's company owned or their own personal property, you know, a PDA, phones, internet kiosks, you know, pretty much any type of device you can think of, you know, as long as they have the authentication credentials, they're able to log in remotely and, you know, be able to get to different parts of the internal network via SSL. So I think, you know, SSL VPN is definitely one of the technologies that is most important for organizations that are, you know, planning out some sort of remote access strategy.
And some of those SSL solutions as well can do some of the things I was mentioning earlier, you know, doing host checking and making sure that the system is at least has a baseline level of security, a baseline level of company policy compliance before it's allowed onto the network.
So what's the best game plan for a solution provider that's trying to help a customer to get ready for remote workers or pandemic planning? Will they need to put together a policy for remote users, for example?
Yeah, they'll definitely need to have different, you know, authentication policies set up. You know, the users need to know what to do when they go home and they need to log in. You know, for instance, would be you have a lot of, you know, colleges and universities that are dealing with this. You have a lot of enterprise organizations, and each level has a different type of authentication that they're used to already. So, you know, a government level organization or an enterprise level organization might have two-factor authentication, some sort of token that users have to use in order to authenticate. And you want to make sure that the users are all educated and that there's some sort of policy that they're aware of, so that when they go home and, you know, if there is some sort of outbreak or, you know, for some reason a lot of users have to, you know, log in remotely at the same time, you know, this, you know, really it's something we've been working with clients on for many years now, you know, so that if there's any type of natural disaster or if their building just has an issue where users can't come in for the day, they know exactly how to authenticate, so you don't have hundreds, if not thousands, of users all calling into the IT help desk at the same time trying to figure out how to use one of these tokens if they've never had to use it, you know, in the office before. You want to make sure that, you know, whatever the authentication is that you're going to have users, you know, using at home, that, you know, they've gone through some sort of policy and end-user awareness training, and then when they go home and they actually need to use it for the first time, it's pretty basic, and it's already something that they've tested out and they know how to use.
Are there long-term opportunities with this type of secure telecommuting work for solution providers? Is it a growing opportunity as a result of this pandemic threat?
Yeah, I mean, we've been doing this type of deployment for many years now, so this is nothing new to us. We've seen the benefits of all different types of remote access solutions. You know, for employees being able to really be able to work at their house or on the road as if they're sitting in the office, not getting, you know, any type of, you know, extra security vulnerabilities or virus outbreaks because they're working out on the road, and not having any extra issues logging into the same network shares, you know, when they're in a remote location. So, you know, we've been working with wireless VPN solutions, where you can go to your house and plug in an access point, and it will give you an IPsec VPN tunnel back into the corporate office. And if you open up your laptop, PDA, your phone, any other device, you can have a VoIP phone sitting on your desk that's plugged into the same gateway, and all of it is tunneled back to the corporate office and gives you the same look and feel as if you're sitting right at your desk. So it makes it, you know, to the point where you can use, you know, printers, local printers, you know, the voice over wireless, voice over IP phones, as well as a laptop, desktop type setup, and you never have to change any of your configurations, whether you take that laptop into the corporate office or take it back to your house. or to any of the branch offices that your organization has. It should all have the same, you know, feeling. You should be authenticating against the same Radius servers. So, you know, everything should really be set up in advance for any of these different, you know, pandemic issues, you know, but it also gives you a lot of benefits beyond, you know, just being able to work from your home for a couple of days if there's some sort of outbreak. You know, it really speeds up, you know, the way that you're able to work from home, and it makes it so that you can get to different network resources that in the past people didn't feel were very secure for you to reach when you weren't in the office.
I think you both touched on this a little bit, but I'm wondering what the future of this market looks like. Are there any specific evolving technologies or corporate culture trends that solution providers should keep an eye on?
Reiterating what Matt was saying, it's a lot of it's tied to wireless, and workers are just becoming more mobile in general, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's just happening, and it will only continue to happen. And as wireless security becomes more robust and more affordable, the mobile offices, the PDAs, the smartphones, things like that are all going to have to be considered in an overall network architecture. And, of course, the security posture is going to have to be tied in with that as well. And it gets down to the nitty-gritty even as to how do you manage your IP space, how do you manage the network segments that it's coming in on, how do you handle DNS out to these users, and a lot of those things, unfortunately, are a little bit overlooked sometimes, particularly for a pandemic-type situation. They'll have a remote access solution in place, and it may well even be very secure, but it's not necessarily scoped to meet, say, a 300% higher number of users coming in remotely as compared to what they normally do. So if you have X number, now it's X to exponent of three, do you really have that capacity? Have you really truly planned for that? And we've seen some of our clients actually got some tight spots because they didn't sufficiently plan for some type of pandemic-like situation.
Well, that leads to my next question. Do solution providers need to differentiate between workers using their home PCs and remote workers who are on BlackBerries or smartphones? Are there two different kind of security mindsets for that?
There are, and, you know, I think it's all kind of collapsing at this point to where it really is just based on, you know, that user's authentication privileges. You know, based on, you know, whatever type of authentication that user has, they should be able to get to the network remotely from any type of device, whether it's a phone, PDA, laptop. You know, they should have a very similar view of the network, you know, regardless of what they're logging in from. So, you know, I think that a lot of those different, you know, wireless areas are all kind of coming together right now, especially because of 802.11n. You know, there's so many more, there's a lot more bandwidth available. So somebody working at their house can, you know, actually work faster than somebody sitting in an office these days. And, you know, it saves a lot of money from having to have a cubicle or, you know, a desk for every single user at the office. We're starting to see that most people are adding hotel rooms into every one of their offices so that there's, you know, somewhere between 2 and 10 different hotel rooms that are, you know, just available for anybody that, you know, comes in for the day. So, you know, you have people that are, you know, only 15 miles away from the office, but, you know, the office is able to save money on, you know, extra leasing, you know, for per square footage for that user. You know, they're able to save money on, you know, all kinds of, you know, things that you wouldn't even think about for that user to come into the office every day and need a parking spot, need, you know, to be able to use all different types of resources at the office, you know, because they're able to log in remotely now. And then, again, you know, their authentication follows them. So, you know, even if they did come into the office and use one of the hotel rooms for the day, they would still be logging in remotely into the network using the same authentication as if they were sitting at their house. So that's kind of, you know, what we've been setting up for a lot of companies over the last few years now, and I think that that's going to just continue to be a trend, and you're going to continue to see a lot more hotel rooms and common areas where people are able to come in and kind of work together for a day or two out of the week if they need to, you know, and collaborate on different projects, but then the rest of the time they're just out, you know, working at their remote office. I was just going to say, I mean, to take it to the next level, with 802.11n being ratified just last month, it's making it so that when you go into these hotel rooms at the offices, you don't even see nearly as many of the wired cable ports that you would plug into. So again, you know, all of the devices that user brings into the office with them, they're most likely going to connect wirelessly and then go through some sort of, you know, authentication remotely, probably using an SSL VPN even. So you'll have a user that, you know, is in the office, and it's as if they've, you know, connected at a hotspot somewhere, and then they've gone through an SSL VPN to connect back into the corporate office. So they'll use their phone and their laptop, most likely across 802.11n wirelessly while they're in the office, and they'll have a lot more bandwidth than if they ever sat down at some cubicle and plugged into a wired port. It'll actually give them, you know, better quality of service and a better user experience altogether just going through a wireless connection.
So do either of you guys have any kind of like real world examples of when this secure remote access comes into play? You know, it's always interesting to hear about the what ifs, you know, what if the pandemic, but is there any type of concrete example you guys have gone through maybe in your work that you can talk about?
Well, yeah, I think that Travis worked on an interesting project recently where it was, you know, another type of natural disaster, and it'd probably be a pretty good example for him to just kind of talk through for a few minutes on, you know, the type of equipment that they had in place before, you know, the accident, and then what happened afterwards, what they added in order to allow remote access.
Sure. So they did have a pretty robust remote access solution, and it worked pretty well, actually. And logically, they came up with a baseline number of, well, I shouldn't say baseline number, more like a ceiling number of the very high end of users that we see working remotely normally, and then adding an additional, say, 25% capacity on top of that, giving room for growth. And the logic's sound. The problem was, at one of their main sites, they was more like a Billy Bob with a backhoe type situation, not a pandemic, but he busted a main water main, and it actually flooded with about 6 inches of water, the first floor of the main building, and then having to shut off the water main, it left the remainder of the campus basically unusable, because obviously no restroom facilities or air conditioning was capable at that point. So they told everybody to go home and work remotely, and basically brought the remote access solution down to its knees for the people that did know how to use it. It also flooded the help desk with hundreds of calls, people that hadn't had to do it in the past or hadn't had to do it in a long time, didn't remember their credentials. The help desk calls were around $15 to $20 a piece just to pick up the phone, so the meter was running on the cost. And so they had two major issues. One, they didn't have enough capacity of their main gateway there in North America. Two, they didn't have the user education in place. And third, from an infrastructure standpoint, they actually had other remote access gateways that they could have utilized in Europe and Asia, and it wouldn't have been ideal, but at least it could have met capacity, but they didn't have any global DNS or global load balancing solution in place to redirect users to a different remote access gateway. So they took several steps to mitigate all those, but the point really is that even though they use sound logic in judging for capacity as it would relate to, a general network access or general network usage for your user base, it didn't take into account the potential for emergency, and it wasn't appropriately scoped in their disaster recovery program. That's since been remediated, and good for them, but it cost them a lot of money for the day. Using conservative numbers, it was well into the six figures in lost productivity by their own estimation. And that was just one day. So what if that had continued on for 2 days, 3 days, et cetera? So it is important to consider and comparative to everything that has to be done as part of a disaster recovery strategy and program. It's a pretty negligible cost, really. So it needs to be taken seriously, and it needs to be thought of in the terms that you introduced this conversation of what if the worst happens versus what if we grow, you know, as we have for the last 10 years.
Thank you both very much for joining us. For more information on secure remote access or secure telecommuting, please visit searchsecuritychannel.com. This has been Patrolling the Channel for October 2009. Thanks for listening.